You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
In recent years, some schools have changed the way they lay out their classrooms. They have gone from a traditional classroom layout to a more open plan classroom one. An example of a traditional classroom setting would be 30 or so students seated at uniform desks with one teacher at the front of the class, while flexible classroom settings are more open and accommodate several teachers to work collaboratively with a larger number of students. The reception from these more open plan classroom spaces has been very broad. Some students enjoy this more social way of learning, others feel overstimulated, and others are finding the shift both good and bad. And recently, an article was written about these changes in school learning spaces, how it is going so far, what some of the results have been, and whether it is a good thing that schools are trying these new ways of learning. So this morning, I spoke with the author of this particular article, Leon Bernardi. Leon Bernardi is an associate professor in the School of Education at AUT, and his current research work focuses on innovative learning environments. I began by asking Leon why the traditional classroom layout was challenged in the first place and how these classroom changes became a reality.
Well, it's actually quite ironic to discover that, or to realize that historically, I mean, when schools first began, they began in big, large, huge rooms where you'd have, you know, like what we would call in New Zealand, a composite class. You know, you'd have, you know, a row of 5-year-olds and a row of 7-year-olds and a row of 9-year-olds. And there'd be, you know, like one teacher and maybe three monitors. That's where the word monitor came from. So the monitor was like a student teacher, but it was really just like a slightly older student in the class who was given the authority to work with the teacher. So if you really want to go back quite some time, you know, go back to the very early days of traditional schooling, and that's what you'll find. And, you know, that's really over time that, you know, we evolved into this, you know, Western setup, evolved into these classrooms with, you know, that were just a single cohort with a limit of, say, 30 students and one teacher. And then, of course, I mean, you know, the kind of school I went to, you know, it was very much, you know, we were sat in rows and, you know, you didn't move around the classroom much and it was pretty inflexible. There was an experiment in about the 60s, mainly in the UK, but it also happened here, to kind of create an open plan scenario. But by all accounts, it was an abject failure. And it's not unsurprising nowadays that some people who are against the current developments in open classroom design hark back to the failed open plan experiment of the 60s. So you often hear that. But there are good kind of reasons why it failed in the 60s and doesn't have to fail now.
Were there signs that asked for a move away from more traditional learning?
Yeah, probably 10 years at least that this shift has been taking place. And this is one of the difficult questions to answer in research as to, you know, it's the old chicken and the egg. Because, you know, some people think the designers are pushing the change, whereas some of the designers are saying that some of the changes in the ways we do teaching and learning are changing, and they're responding to that. So, you know, what's come first? Is it the changes in teaching and learning, or is it the designers who are coming up with some trendy ideas for classroom design? And there isn't a clear response to that, and a lot depends on who you speak to. But There is a kind of two things do come together. That is to say, changes in teaching and learning and the, you know, modern designs that architects are coming up with. But I suppose you're going to ask, well, where do the changes in teaching and learning come from? And I suppose to some extent, they can be sort of sheeted back to the changes in technology and digital exposure young people have nowadays, which means that, you know, your typical young person there, your school-going student today is quite different than the school-going student, let's say, of 30 years ago or 20 years ago. And so students and children themselves are coming to school with a whole bunch of different experiences and different expectations. And they don't actually, I think, expect to come into the classroom and sit down and be talked to by a teacher for, you know, half an hour. So I think that's kind of prompted teachers to rethink the way they approach teaching and learning. And then there's this coincidence with you know, modern approaches to classroom design and ways that classroom design can actually better support progressive ways of teaching and learning.
Yeah, so what are some examples of the change in layout or furniture or even colour in these classrooms now?
Yeah, and I mean, in addition to the architects, you know, you've got the furniture designers, and they've been at work for ages at coming up with different approaches to furniture design, because, you know, they're saying, hang on, some of these, well, for starters, of course, you know, those desks that I was describing when I was at school, you know, if you can imagine, I'm sure you've seen pictures of them, those, you know, wooden desks with a lid and an inkwell, and you know, you sat one person at this desk, and they're a bit of a furniture item, a retro furniture item in some homes nowadays, if you can get a hold of one. But even more modern forms of furniture, you know, which was a kind of a desk and a chair, often weren't very well designed, you know, ergonomically. They didn't really suit, you know, they were just designed for one's body shape. And, you know, so the furniture designers themselves have been working on some quite novel designs to better suit a range of different kinds of students and body shapes and sizes. So there's that going on. Then, of course, you've got the architect and then coming up with these kind of interesting spatial designs for classrooms. And you kind of put the two together, and you can just see the range of different furniture colours and different furniture types and how they can be grouped differently. And the space, that's the critical thing. The physical space in which the learning and teaching takes place is much bigger and more, the design was much more flexibility in mind than your you know what, and I'm not sure what kind of school you entered, but you know, your typical single-cell classroom, pretty inflexible. You've got a rectangular box and there's not much more you can do with it. And, you know, chuck 30 desks and chairs and then some students. You know, you've got, instead of that, that's been replaced with, you know, Auckland University, AET University. I mean, they've all got, you know, down Canterbury now, Christchurch. They've, all the new building designs in the universities are reflecting this kind of open spatial approach, with more opportunities for students to blend, you know, socialising and working, you know, relaxing and working at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, there definitely seems to be a lot of positives behind these changes. And I guess to try and get a rounded view on this, alongside these positives, are there any negatives?
Sure, there are negatives. I mean, in a school setting, you know, the obvious negative, especially if the space is not well designed, because that can happen. Sometimes just the design doesn't work once it's been built. You know, if there aren't sufficient acoustic barriers and if the wrong materials have been used internally, you know, in terms of soundproofing and, you know, acoustic, various forms of acoustic materials that can be used, if that hasn't been properly implemented, I mean, then you've got problems with noise spillover. So, you know, you've got to have the right design to ensure that the different spaces are acoustically sealed from each other, even if there are no walls, because you know obviously you can't have someone trying to do some work in one part of the environment unable to be heard because, you know, just a few meters away there's another group doing something else. So and that's the thing with the teaching and learning in some of these big spaces, is that there'll be multiple groups doing different jobs at different times, at the same time. So you know, that's a problem. If the design isn't right, you have acoustic spillover, and, you know, that's problematic. It's problematic for students who've got, not all universally true, but many children have got special learning needs do struggle. And especially as a modern spaces, you know, there's lots of colour. There's, you know, fluorescent lighting often. And, you know, it can just freak some students out because it's just too much sensory input all at once. So that's a downside. So really the same kind of children can be negatively affected. You know, it's either acoustic because they can't hear properly what the teacher's saying, because there's too much background noise, and or, you know, the space is just too stimulating, it's overstimulating to them. So those would be amongst the major problems.
And has this led to better academic outcomes? Because I guess this is another question, but how do you judge that student learning has improved? Is it through, like, their academic results or their behaviour or potentially, like, their creativity or initiative?
I think it's so difficult to answer the question of, you know, how do you determine whether academic outcomes are improved? Because the thing is that there isn't, and I'm not a quantitative researcher, right, but I know there isn't any one single cause that you can attribute, say, oh, well, these students have done better now because they're in these big open learning spaces, or these students are doing better because they're not in an open learning space. I mean, it just isn't possible to pin down one single causal factor that makes a difference to student outcomes, because, I mean, there's a whole range of things. You know, I mean, how are you actually assessing this? You know, are you assessing it over time, or is it a snapshot? You know, something like the PISA test, P-I-S-A test, which the OECD runs every few years. I mean, that's kind of a snapshot. You know, and on the day that you took the snapshot, you know, were all those children adequately fed? Were they, you know, did they have a good day to start with? I mean, there's just so many factors at play. So, you know, and that was one of the questions that was in the brief for writing that article for The Conversation is, you know, how do we know? Well, we don't really know. And you know, there is an attempt to develop some bank of quantitative data around students' outcomes in flexible learning spaces, but it's still such an early field that there just hasn't been enough time yet to develop that kind of knowledge. So the quick answer to your question is, no, we don't know if these open learning spaces positively influence learning outcomes or negatively. I mean, we don't know yet. We don't know enough, I would argue.
The final question I'd like to ask is, do you think it's important that we continue to try and explore new ways of learning?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the simple answer to that question is, you know, when you trot off to the dentist, you hope that the dentist is using the most up-to-date equipment and techniques, don't you? I mean, you'd be a bit horrified if you walked into the dental laboratory, the dental surgery that I would have experienced as a 10-year-old. If you went into that dental surgery today, you'd say, no, I'm out of here. Yeah. So why do we assume or expect that teachers in schools should do things in 2021, 2022 in the same way as we did them in 1922? I mean, why would you do that? Why would you expect that? I don't get that. You know, and yet there will be many parents, especially if they've been brought up in a traditional school, they'll walk into an area of the school and they'll look around and they'll say, where's my child's desk? Where's my child going to sit? You know, why isn't my child going to face the front? Where's the front? Because there is no front. You know, and it's just there's this kind of expectation that a school's not a school unless we're all sitting in these orderly desks, or at least, you know, groups, you can accept groups, but, you know, it's got to be ordered and it's got to be organized and we've got to see the front of the room. And, yeah, and there's a, yeah, this hankering for something really old-fashioned, and I don't understand it.
That was Associate Professor in the School of Education at AUT, Leon Bernardi, talking to me about open plan classroom settings.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.